Josh and Frankie.
What a couple of dumb shits.
Hello, primates! You found Primus Tracks. Congratulations! We are at Primus Tracks on Instagram and Twitter. You can find Frankie's Facebook page by searching Primus Tracks. You can email us, primustrackspod@gmail.com. I am Josh. Right over there, Primus Tracks Towers, is Frankie.
Hi, Josh. Hello, everyone.
Welcome to June 2010. Blast
wow,
from the past.
Way back machine.
That's right. When Primus fans around the world were getting super excited because they knew that Jay Lane was back in the fold. They knew that something was coming, that Primus would be with them shortly. And then one day in June 2010, four tracks appeared on the Primus website for free download. I downloaded them. How about you, Frankie?
Yes, I grabbed them straight away and I couldn't stop playing them.
Absolutely. We're going to get into why these four tracks are really fun to play today. So we're going to talk about the June 2010 rehearsal EP. Such a creative title. And we're also going to sneak in a little bit on the Mayamo Mud release that came on the heels of that. They gave us a lot in 2010 leading up to the reunion tour. This was a time when I thought, oh, Primus has finally embraced the internet. You know, after a long hiatus, even though, as we've said, and they were on the cutting edge in the mid to late 90s, and then they let it drop for a while. So they were back with this internet presence. As we often do, we have some business to take care of at the forefront. We have a 5-star review from Apple Podcasts, Frankie. And of course, that grants admission into the Punch Bowl. You too can join the Punch Bowl. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Say whatever you want. Praise Frankie. Make fun of me. Tell us how Primus Tracks has changed your life for the better or the worse. I'll read it right here on the podcast. Today's 5-star review is from Clone Steak, which is a great name, I have to say. And they titled their review, Frankie and the Proverbial Mind Spread. Clone Steak goes on to say, Josh and Frankie have put together the ultimate podcast for any Primus fan. Soya has been a mainstay on the show, and his first-hand accounts of the band are impeccable and always entertaining. Josh, you are a master of emulating the sounds of Primus with your voice, which will be forever ingrained in my mind.
Guitar, bass, vocals, you got it all down.
Meow, you bet. Frankie is a master of Primus trivia and has more information than any website on the internet.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thanks for everyone's work on making the best podcast and, most importantly, the most entertaining podcast ever. Charisma all around. Well, thank you, Clone Steak. I appreciate that review.
Thank you for your review. It's really kind.
We're buoyed by your support. It's a fun word to say. Feeling buoyed.
We do have a correction, Josh. Turns out that we played a live cut of Rapscallion labeled as Detroit, but it was not performed in Detroit, so who knows what happened there? I have no clue.
Who is your archivist? I really hope that you fired them. There was no Rapscallion performed at the Detroit date on the Fromage tour, so it's a mystery. Where did that Rapscallion
come from? Just imagine
if
there had been.
I'd still be kicking myself for not going. I'm still upset about that, and I just can't get over it. Oh, we should thank some folks, too, who have either gained entrance to Captain Shiner's yacht or re-upped their membership so they can take a little spin on the Captain's yacht whenever they like. I'd like to thank the following people who donated to the podcast and received stickers in kind or will receive stickers. I got to get back to some of these folks. Kyle in Massachusetts, thanks again for re-upping. Nick in the Netherlands, he's putting my kids through college, Frankie.
Nick, you're amazing. We
love you. Nick, thank you so much for your generosity. And finally, Anthony in New York, thank you very much for your contribution as well. Anthony emailed primustrackspod@gmail.com, and he let me know, Frankie, that he is on the Blame It on the Fish DVD. When they were on the radio show, he asked a question about the track Marry the Ice Cube. So I know the guy who asked that question on that DVD now.
I can claim, Josh, that I am supposed to be in the Denver DVD, whenever that comes out.
Oh, yes. The abandoned Denver DVD from the Goblins tour back in 17, correct? Or 18?
I made a point to tell one of the camera guys to get some shots of me.
I'm sure they love that.
Yeah.
He probably put you right on the edge of the frame for every single shot. so you could say, hey, there's my shoulder. We will discuss that mystery, I think, when we get to the Goblins album, Desaturating Seven, and talk about what could have been with that. So once again, thank you guys for your contributions. PayPal is PrimusTraxPod@gmail.com. The Venmo is @PrimusTracks. And if you do feel so inclined, you can donate to our podcast costs, and we will happily send you some stickers designed by Frankie. Our pal Brian helped digitize them. And
we will appreciate you forever.
Oh, absolutely. These stickers are of the highest quality. They're printed by Sticker Robot. Beautiful vinyl stickers. I've got a lot of them, and I'd love to unload them onto some Primus Tracks fans. Get in your time machines. It's June 2010. I'll tell you where I was, Frankie. I wasn't very far away from where I am now, but I was 20, or no, I had just turned 29 years old.
Wow.
And I was in the prime of my life. I still am. But I remember just being incredibly excited, of course, in the spring of 2010 and going into June when the rehearsal EP hit the Primus website.
Let's share our first impressions about this release, Josh.
I think I was just so overjoyed to hear the mixing of the generations, I suppose, with Jay, of course, who recorded the Sausage demo, left just as Primus was about to hit it big, playing with Larry, and Les, of course, is the constant. But having that lineup was really exciting for me. So knowing that Jay was in the fold and knowing what he could bring to it, I couldn't press download fast enough, and I couldn't turn my speakers up loud enough for this release, because they do sound like they're having a ton of fun.
Well, my first impression of this release was that I was pretty struck by the sound of the band. I had never heard Primus like this before. It was, not as clinical as the sound that they had during the Wonka tour, but it was a lot more polished even than some studio recordings for me. They sounded like an incredibly cohesive and tight unit. Pretty much perfect is the way I would describe their sound on this release. But that does not mean that it's lifeless. Actually, I was also pretty surprised by how reinvigorated Les sounded in the recordings, as well as Lur. And of course, for a lot of us who discovered the band with Herve and also went back and enjoyed what Brain had brought to the table, this release was kind of a ring of fire, right, for Jay. And I must say that I was incredibly surprised by his performance on the EP. So discovering later that this EP, well, the way that it sounds, is the result of Jay Lane practicing really hard to learn these songs in the rehearsal space by himself, makes a whole lot of sense when you hear the way that he has all of these songs nailed down. It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, he does spend weeks upon weeks, I believe he said, just pounding away at the Herb tracks, the Brain tracks, and then coming back around to tracks that he had played on, such as Herald and Pudding Time, to find that groove again.
It's really great because not only did he learn the tracks, I mean, he made a point to learn the parts, but he was also peppering each one with his unique touch, right? He made a lot of these songs his own, whether it be with the hi-hat or what he was doing in terms of cymbal work or snare drum or toms. I mean, he learned the songs, but he also modified things in his own style, which I think makes for a really interesting listen.
No better way to start than by looking at Pudding Time, the opening track on this release, but also a pretty common show opener in the Jay era, especially in the first tour or two. It seemed like it was their anthem, because as we know from the book, this was the first tune they jammed on, I believe. And
they even played it on TV.
Oh, that's right. Was that Kimmel?
I think so, yes. What was really cool about the performance is that I don't know if it was just a stroke of genius or if the camera guy was a Primus fan, but they made a point to give Lur some camera time during Pudding Time. So for at least for me, that was the first time I saw what he does on the guitar during Pudding Time.
Oh, very good. So good on them, because, yeah, quite often he gets short shrift. And not that he minds, but we mind. that's what matters. So let's talk about Pudding Time. It's the reunion anthem. And I have to say, you know, Jay made it a killer tune on the Sausage demo, and he brings that bouncy funkiness back to that track. It doesn't sound like the Frizzle Fry version. It sounds like the Sausage demo version again. And it seems like it's just that perfect reintroduction for him. It's a tune that he was familiar with and that he helped compose. And it's a Primus staple. You know, it's different though. There's no thundering double kick from in the style of Herb, but when you listen to that hi-hat, you know Jay Lane's on the kit. So
yes,
it's very different. There is some double kick during the heaviest part, which is kind of cool because I remember Jay saying it was tough for him to learn a lot of those double kick patterns, given that's not something he had done regularly in his career. But boy, do they sound energized. And this has a really live feel. Do you feel that way, Frankie? It seems like they just plugged in the rig and went with it. And made it sound like, you know, these guys are playing live. Not a ton of polish, but it does sound great.
It's amazing because it does have that spontaneous quality, like they just plugged in and started playing away. But at the same time, it's so cohesive that you realize it's something that they have been practicing for a while, especially considering it's such a difficult song, right?
Right. It is complex. The guitars, of course, are all over the place. Thanks to Todd Huth. And then Jay's doing his thing and Les is, you know, I think the mix is really clear here. So you can hear a lot of the variations that Les puts in on it that aren't necessarily on the record. And that's why I think it's got that live feel. There's a lot of things he's doing that he does live that he didn't do when it was recorded back for that debut studio album. Let's listen to the heavy part. Everybody's favorite. And hear the contributions of one Jay Lane as he rejoins Primus. There they are. Headbanging. I could sit here and complain that that crash is pushed to the back of the mix, but I don't care. It sounds great.
And what is really amazing about this band is that is there any other circumstance where you would look forward to a specific section in a song just because you want to hear the way a particular drummer is going to play it?
Right, yeah. I want to know how he's going to take on this part. And I think that happens in a lot of fandoms, yeah. So with this one, that part that we just played, I think a lot of people were thinking, how's Jay going to pull this off? But it sounds great, and he's mixing the best of both worlds. He's given us that Herb heaviness, but he's also given us the Jay Lane funky bounce. And it's probably tough to pull off, but we know, you know, Jay's a pro. The other thing I remember thinking is, I got to see these guys live. And I don't remember the timeline of events. I don't know if the tour had already been announced and tickets were already on sale. I would imagine so. Just knowing that they were coming back and that first set of tour dates was released, I immediately bought tickets for the Vegas show and then plane tickets to Vegas so that I could go see him at that special midnight show post-Rush. So I had to go see him. And it was just so getting ahead of myself there in August of 2010. It was certainly orgasmic, and I'm not trying to be gross. The dopamine release that night was phenomenal numerous times. Hey, I was only 29. So there's Pudding Time. I don't think I realized this in 2010, but it kind of makes sense to start with Pudding Time, a Jay Lane track, and then move on to a Tim Alexander track, such as American Life, and then a Brain track, such as Duchess, and then come back around to a Jay Lane original in Herald.
Yes.
So I think there was some calculating going on there to show Jay's range or to show them, hey,
yes,
we can play all this stuff.
That's a brilliant observation, Josh. I agree completely.
Oh,
on one hand, I think they were doing that. And at the same time, in terms of sequence, I think American Life is a great choice because first you have this sonic assault with Pudding Time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now they are showcasing how Jay can also hop on the jam vehicle and bring something to the table in terms of this particular area of Primus, which was something really that Les had a great interest in since Fromage.
And the Fromage tour, I recall American Life being this, and we've talked about it before, this bloated 14, 15 minute thing. And a lot of people called it the bathroom break song. But this was the time that they started paring that down. Even though it would clock in at 9 or 10 minutes, it felt like a fairly tight 9 or 10 minutes.
It felt curated, for sure.
Yeah, that jam was more structured, and they kind of knew that they had constraints on it. So we get it's kind of hard to call a 9 or 10 minute rock song tight, especially if it's got a jam section, but it kind of feels that way, especially in comparison to those 14 minute epics.
And in terms of this one, Josh, I think we were all looking forward to what we refer to as the reward of American Life, which is the coda, right?
Oh, yes, that payoff, yeah. Oh, you want to start with the coda? You just want to blow everybody's wad right away?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Frankie's the kind of guy that eats dessert first, I think. So, all right, I will humor you. Ice cream time. Oh, yeah.
Is it me or Lur kind of stole the show there?
That's the thing, is this is so clearly produced or clearly mixed or what have you. Larry's nice and audible, and you can hear more of what he's doing, some of those subtleties. So he really took it and ran with it there. But Jay really is bringing it there.
Yes.
You know, nothing is lost there, and I think that shows it.
Well, after this little indulgence, I think you can elaborate, Josh, on what you were going to say regarding American Life.
Yeah, you're going to eat your vegetables now. Actually, I really just wanted to point out that this is one of those tracks where Tim Alexander, it just sounds like he's just effortlessly giving us those double kick flourishes. And Jay Lane's duplicating it, and it sounds natural. So he's doing something that he doesn't normally do, but he's rehearsed his ass off, and it sounds like he's delivering the track as it's meant to be delivered. But I want to bring us back to the jam section in the middle, because there's a couple of things that he does. I will say, for about the first half of that jam section, he sounds like Tim Alexander. I'm going to play a bit of that. He almost sounds like that lumbering silverback, just how he's hitting a lot of these toms and while he's riding that kick during the first half here. And then listen to it give way to this hi-hat work. Now I know Jay Lane's on the skins here. He's just murdering that thing. It's a really cool contrast between those two parts to me. It's 9 minutes or whatever, but it sounds natural. And then did you notice at the very end, Frankie, what they say to each other?
Oh, it was barely audible in your sample.
Oh, I haven't gotten it. I didn't play it yet.
Oh.
But at the very end of the track, Les and Jay have an exchange, and I might try to work it in later, but it is really low volume.
That was good.
Les says, "What'd you miss?" And Jay says, "Oh, a bunch of shit." So Jay knows he didn't hit everything absolutely correctly, but to the layman like us, we don't know.
Wow. I think all those years of pumping up the volume to hear Seas of Cheese properly may have done some damage to my ears.
Oh, you didn't catch that on the recording?
No, never. I have never heard that.
Oh, it's extremely low. So when I was listening to this back before we recorded, I had to crank the volume to make out what they were actually saying to each other. It was worth it to hear Jay say, bunch of shit. On to Duchess and the Proverbial Mind Spread, or as some of our listeners like to say, Frankie and the Proverbial Mind Spread. Once again, this is a Brown Album track. So when I saw this on the list, I thought, hey, nothing's off limits. We're going to get Brown Album tracks. We might get a Rhinoplasty track. We might get an Antipop track. And we got tracks from all three of those releases in the Jay Lane era.
From your perspective, Josh.
Yeah.
Do you think for Jay, it was equally daunting to approach a brain track as a herf track, or do you think a brain track may have been tougher than a herf one?
Well, it seems to me that Brain and Jay have a lot more in common. I would think that it wasn't necessarily easier, but it was more in Jay's wheelhouse that he could pick up on that groove and what Brain's bringing to this track. I think, and Jay slots in nicely on this one. You know, he's right at home on the hi-hat and those ride grooves, and they sound like Jay Lane, but it also, he's building or interpreting Brain. And like I said, those guys are both funky as hell. So it's something that I think wasn't too much of a stretch. And I did mention, well, this is a Brown album track telling us that nothing's off limits. But the other thing is Dutchess has this great drum freakout part. So we get to hear Jay's take on the drum freakout, and what an opportunity for him to show off. So
yes,
certainly calculated, it seems. Ugh, filthy. I love that right there. Jay sounds great there. So syncopated, doing Jay-laden things. Really energetic. You know, they talked. I remember them talking about Brain being this ball of energy when he joined Primus, but Jay Lane too. He's a big, energetic guy. You know, he's a big, happy guy. So, as he's been described, so pretty similar energy, I'd imagine.
It might very well be one of my favorite renditions of Dutchess ever.
Oh wow!
Sure. I mean, oh, wow. It was just tremendous.
Yeah,
he really got that part down.
And this one, too, this recording, they jam it out a little bit. There's an extended Lur Freak out right after Jay does his thing. But you can hear Les and Jay, you know, remember, even Enor said it, and a lot of people have said it. Les's right hand and Jay's right foot are cosmically linked, you know,
yes.
Enor said. And he witnessed it firsthand night after night. And you can hear it throughout this track. So
another thing that struck me about this rendition of Dutchess, I don't know if it's just me or you feel the same way, but at some parts it has this kind of reggae feel not present in the studio recording, right?
Because it's more driving I think it's more driving on the record, but this one, it's a little more loose. And I think it's during those jam parts, especially, so how Lur's skanking, but then Les is playing these more reggae sounding or inspired licks. And I think Jay's picking up on that too. Yeah, I'd agree with you. There's that. And of course that pertains to something we're going to get to, on the Naga Hide album. There's a kind of a reggae type breakdown on a particular track. I'll let the listeners tell me what it is right now. Correct. You got it. You guys are so good. 100%. So it was really cool to include Dutchess on this one. The drum freakout telling us that they're going to play Brown album tracks, which I remember people were rejoicing in the streets at the idea that we'd hear more Brown album tracks, which were once thought lost to eternity. So fourth track, Herald of the Rocks. And I'm happy to tell you, Frankie, you get your well.
It's blessed.
This tune really, I think, plays to Jay Lane's strengths. I mean, he basically wrote the drum part for it, much like Pudding Time. And he really gets to funk it up here. And also, given the mix, the drums have a lot of space, especially during the verses, with, of course, the minimal bass line and guitar line. So you really get to hear what Jay's laying down there. It's almost like he's playing lead drums during the verses to me. So just that little brrrah, that's so great. I love that little Jay Lane lick right there. So he's filling that space nicely. Really cool stuff going on. And actually, there's a part I wanted to play, Frankie. There's some interesting phrasing during that descending chromatic riff. I want to get your take on the phrasing on the drums here, because I don't think I hear this too often in live renditions with Jay or Herb or anybody. you hear that part?
Yes.
Right there, yeah. The drums don't normally follow that, the bass and guitar. They just don't, they don't normally follow like that, I think. So it was kind of cool to have all three of them do that kind of syncopation as opposed to just the drums driving right through as you heard in the last repetition of it. So kind of cool. I don't know.
Can we also hear what it sounds like before they go into the breakdown? Because that's the part, for me, that's the part to look forward to. I'm always curious what Liz is going to do.
Ah, yeah, that sounds nice.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. Oh, man, funky as hell. So that's, you know, when those two guys get together, Jay and Les, that is what you get. And how could you be disappointed?
When we dissect the songs this way, we realize that we got the heavy part of Putting Time to Look Forward To during the bridge. Mm-hmm. Then we have the coda of American Life. We have the drum part of Duchess. And we have this cool part in Harold. So that's four amazing parts to look forward to in a row.
Once again, it lets us know that Jay's going to deliver the goods, or that all three of them really are going to deliver the goods. I mean, tell me they're not having fun on this recording throughout. I was going to say it's free, so you get what you pay for, but it's really great. What a great free release. I don't know if he's using a Carl Thompson here or a Pachyderm prototype.
That's a good point. I mean, to me, at least, and I could be wrong, it sounds like a Pachyderm.
It does to me, too. It's very mid-rangey, and I'm going to point to the tone on Putting Time. I think that's where I
and
first...
And Harold.
And Harold, too. So that's where I first thought, oh, this must be a Pachy prototype. Because I know he debuted them live on the subsequent tour, but I would imagine he was already plunking around on them in the rehearsal space. And I think this is around the time where Larry's playing all Fenders, too, and it definitely has that sound. And they didn't sweeten anything, and I think that's great. It gives us, it's to their credit, because it harkens back to that raw Primus of the late 80s that Jay Lane was a part of, but they have a more refined approach now because, of course, they're older, wiser, and better. But if you play it loud, this EP sounds phenomenal and holds up with just about any other Primus recording. All right, Frankie, listen to this part of the EP, and you tell me, are these guys miserable or what? They're fired up.
That was insane.
I love that.
Never mind the part before the breakdown. This part was insane.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something to look forward to, and it's at the very end.
What the
hell? And you get some bonus commentary right after that, too. I forget what they say, but they're having a good time. You can just hear them talking in the background there. So these guys are, they came back, and boy, were they primed for this. And I'm not making a pun. They were primed for this.
Young and hot, like Les said in the commentary of Animals.
Eternally young and hot. Oh, man. So we talked about the EP, Frankie, but just a few months later, I believe it was November of 2010, we got another free digital download from Primus in the form of Me Llamo Mud.
That's right. So I know that for a lot of people, the June EP wraps up after four tracks. But for me, you know that I like to mess with the canon. If you look up the June rehearsal EP on my music library, it's actually got five tracks. And that's because I tagged Me Llamo Mud at the end of the previous four songs. Because even though it was recorded at a different time, to me, it has the same sound quality and essence as these four recordings.
That makes sense. And I'm sure it was recorded at a later date, not at the same time as the rehearsal EP.
Yes.
Because Les had to learn the Spanish portions, of course. But
what I understand, Josh, is that Les was overwhelmed by the response of the crowd in Chile.
Yeah.
Because they opened for Faith No More.
Right.
And I have seen recordings of the performance, and Jesus Christ, the people are really, really enjoying the show in a way that you don't see in other countries.
Right.
I mean, if you go to a Primus show in Mexico, people get pretty fired up, but I have to admit that the last time they were here, when I saw the recordings of Chile, they gave us a run for our money. They really, really go crazy.
Yeah.
So I understand that this was kind of a thank you to the Spanish-speaking crowd. And the lyrics were written by Ida, who is J. Lane's wife. And, of course, they are not perfect, but I understand where she was coming from. She was trying to make the narrative fit in a musical way. So she had to make some concessions.
Oh, right. So a literal translation wouldn't have worked with the meter and the timing, correct?
No, it wouldn't.
Okay. So we didn't really talk too much about this version when we talked about the studio track, My Name is Mud. So when I'm looking at these lyrics, and I can suss out some of the Spanish and see what's different, but I'm sure you can speak about it much more eloquently.
Yes. So, for example, in the original song, Les sings, "'Cause I'm the most boring sons of bitch you've ever seen."
Mm-hmm.
And in the Spanish translation, I mean, they use the equivalent to "and," which I mean, it doesn't make sense if you translate the song directly.
Oh, okay.
Because in Spanish it says, "Soy el bastardo más aburrido y usted jamás ha visto." So that doesn't make any sense at all in Spanish. Yeah, it's also really weird when he says that this guy is 6 pies alto. I mean, in Spanish, we never use feet to refer to someone's height. If this song did not exist in English and it had been released in Spanish for the first time, I would have had no idea what he was talking about, because we just don't use that to talk about how tall a person is. But again, it wouldn't have fit the narrative musically to do it correctly, which would have been to describe meters and centimeters.
Right, yes. It's not very lyrical. it's instead of 6'2" and rude as hell, it was 1 meter, 32 centimeters and rude as hell, or whatever, right?
Yes. and they also use, there's another mistake here, because it's when they're describing this guy near the end of the track, when Les says, "The breath on that fat bastard could bring any man to tears," right?
Uh-huh.
So in the Spanish version, it's female. El aliento de ese bastardo gordo la podría traer a lágrimas. So they are talking about a woman.
Oh, yeah. Right, because Spanish has masculine and feminine.
That's right.
Yeah. So there is a confusion there, I suppose, around. And that's something, for me, that when I was learning Spanish in school, that was tough for me for a while. But, because English is not a gendered language, which is the term I believe is used. So, right. So a lot of this can be a literal translation, which just doesn't seem to work in the language you're translating into.
That's right. But it's fun. I mean, I really appreciate them doing something like this. And it's a welcome addition to their catalog. Mm-hmm. If not for the lyrics, for me at least, for the music, because even though Les is playing the rainbow, for some strange reason, it doesn't sound like the rainbow, right?
Let's hear the intro and decide for ourselves. Oh, that sounds like the rainbow to me. Oh, for sure. By the way, great sound quality.
Maybe it's because of the concept of the recording, but to me it sounds cleaner than the Rainbow usually does, because I'm used to the Rainbow being like this imprecise, very open and creative thing, and these sounds kind of clinical.
Yeah, so it could be a product of the recording rig, mixing, bass setup, what have you. So it does sound pretty darn good, yeah. It doesn't sound loose and wobbly as it can from time to time. This is an interesting one to provide to the Spanish-speaking crowd.
Yeah. Of course, Les couldn't memorize the Spanish lyrics, but
yeah,
he did make a point to sing a little portion in a Spanish whenever he's in a Spanish-speaking country.
Good on him. He knows his crowds. I know I've said it before on this podcast, and I'll say it again. Chilean rock crowds are the best crowds on the planet. They blow me away every time I see those videos, whether it's Primus or whoever.
Yeah.
Iron Maiden.
Total respect for those guys.
Yeah,
they are on a whole different level. Yes, let's hear them go crazy before the guitar solo. Another mistake there.
that's good stuff right there. And then that extra beat too, as they do the stop start thing. That's not gonna bother Jay Lane. So
no,
this was a cool gift to us. It sounds great. I'm a fan.
Yes, I mean, I wouldn't replace the original version for this one, but I do enjoy playing it quite often.
It's nice to hear another interpretation of it from the same guys, or, you know,
yeah,
another
something cool to have.
Yeah, or another combination, I guess, of those guys. So it's, you know, that's why we always want to hear about demos or alternate takes or something. We want to hear how these songs came to be. So, but, you know, after
the
fact.
But Les has no time for that.
That's right. But even getting something after the fact like this, to hear their interpretation of it many years onward, perhaps with a different lineup, depending on what song you're talking about, equally fascinating.
Can we hear how clean the coda sounds?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Just perfect.
He lets that harmonic ring. It's still going. Okay, I'll stop it. So, you know, if we treat the rehearsal EP and Mea Alma Mud as one release, to me, I just remember thinking when I heard these, I just thought Primus is back and they are with it.
It makes sense, right?
At that point, I had disposable income and means of transportation. So to fill the void of those live experiences, we talked about the fallow period of 5 through 9, but 2010, going forward in the Jay Lane era, I got to catch 6 shows in which he was the drummer. You know, it doesn't sound like a ton because I know some people were following them for dozens of dates at a time, but they were running through my area quite a bit. So to get to 6 shows in which Jay Lane was the drummer, looking back on it, what an exciting time to be a Primus fan. Great shows, high energy. Jay's bringing it. They're all bringing it. And I wanted to go to every show I could.
Particularly exciting because of what was about to come. So before we discuss what came after this, Any final thoughts on the June rehearsal EP, Josh?
How about you? Final thoughts on the June EP?
For me, it's, you know, I keep remembering what Soya said once about how whenever Primus had a new drummer, that drummer had to showcase what they had in order to convince the fans that he was worthy of the spot in the band, right?
Yeah.
I think these recording is, you know, it speaks for itself. You could go to back in that time, you could have attended a Primus show without any previous exposure to what they sounded like at the time. And I think you would have been blown away by any concert. But if you attended any of these shows, knowing what they sounded like, thanks to this recording, I think you were even more excited for it just because of how cohesive these songs sound, right?
And that's part of the reason I was buying plane tickets to Vegas and then trying to plot to see them on their Northwest run a bunch of times. I could only go once, but it was a great night. Man, yeah, I wanted to see them as much as I could. So when they
even
were touring,
even the cover artwork is cool.
Oh, we didn't even talk about that. They're riding the Hennepin crawler for crying
out loud. They're riding that legendary contraption. Yes,
that's right. We're going to talk more about that when we get to the track.
Oh yes, we're going to go into it real good.
Yes, we're going to discuss the engineering and mechanics that go into creating such a machine, and how to impress them steampunk girls.
So we carry on to 2011, and these guys were not slowing down in the slightest. They were fully booked. So they had some gigs in Australia. Hi, Rodney. They went back to the U.S., and of course, they also went down to South America, but that was later on after the album had been released. So we're talking about a considerable chunk of time from February 2011 all the way to August. They were performing shows.
Wow.
I mean, they did have some breaks here and there, but they were pretty consistent when it came to live performances during that year. And this particular time was referred to by Liz as the guinea pig tour, because they were dropping Green Naga Hive numbers on the crowd for the first time.
Yeah.
So there were some pretty lucky fans who got a taste of The Last Salmon Man, More on TV, Chili's on Smack, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Definitely
that song
Man.
Also made, Chili's also made an appearance, Green Ranger as well.
Oh, wow.
I mean, yeah, they were really showcasing several songs from the album.
Yeah, and I recall a lot of those new songs being uploaded to YouTube. And of course, it was 2010, and people were using either very primitive cell phones or digital cameras with really shitty mics, because I'm guilty of doing that. When I tried to record Coattails of a Dead Man, it just sounds horrible. But those people were kind enough to put those tunes on YouTube, you know? And so we were hearing some of these new tunes before the record came out, albeit with varying audio quality. I do remember one particular upload of More on TV in which right before they start, Les says, "You're going to love this fucking song." And then they jump right into it, and it sounded heavy as hell in that live performance. So really cool stuff.
The Eyes of the Squirrel also made an appearance.
Oh, wow. So they previewed half the album on that tour.
Yes, and lest we forget, a triumphant performance at Bonnaroo 2011.
Ah, yes. That one is oft cited by the fans, casual and hardcore, as being quite a performance. People point to that Tommy quite often.
Hennepin Crawler also came up here and there.
Of course you would mention Hennepin Crawler at any given opportunity. Oh, we'll get to it. Wow, what an exciting time, 2010, 2011. We're getting these rehearsal recordings. We're getting tons of live performances and tours from all over the world. And it's all leading up to Green Naga Hide.
Exciting times to be into Primus, for sure.
Absolutely. And I remember it because I was there. And I can't wait to relive Green Naga Hide, a record I have not listened to in quite some time. So, and I think I find myself doing that on purpose, Frankie. I don't listen to the record until we get to it. That way I can listen to it.
Oh, you
want to
have fresh ears.
Exactly. I said fresh eyes, but I'll go with fresh ears. That makes more sense. And then I can then I can really dive into it, because I don't have any recency bias. That's where we're headed next, folks. Green Naga Hide's just around the corner. We'll be back next time, getting into Green Naga Hide. Gird your loins. Later days.
Willie Mays.